here. And also, let me start with a warning. Since my formally, I will tell about the results toward the end of my seminar. But since I'm working in a formalism which is a little bit different from everyone else here, I prepare an introduction. So to my formalism. So keep your question toward the end. Let me tell. So here is the Sitter manifold, which is our beloved space-time. As we heard about here, the several coordinate systems which are possible on this manifold, but I would like to present a method which does not make use of any of those coordinate systems. So my method, the method is based on the locus, which is the asymptotic cone in the embedding space-time. So you see the Sitter manifold, which is the yellow manifold, and the asymptotic cone you get just putting zero here. This cone plays two important roles in the study of the Sitter classical or quantum field theory. The first crucial role is that it provides the global light cone ordering of this manifold. Simply look at the figure, you can see what is the past, what is the future, and what is the elsewhere of a point, simply attaching the light cone of the ambient space-time to that point. So here is the future, here is the past, and this is the region which is space-like separated with respect to the choice of this point. So it gives the Lorentzian structure of the manifold. A second role that the light cone in the ambient space plays in this play is that of momentum space. So you can understand this if you try to write the geodesics in the De Sitter universe. Since this is a maximal symmetric space-time, as a sphere, you can get all the geodesics by cutting the manifold with planes which pass through the geometrical center of the figure. That plane also cut the light cone along two light-like generatrices, and you can parameterize the geodesics using those two light cones. You can make the simple exercise and verify that this is a full parametrization of all the geodesics on the De Sitter manifold in terms of the proper time. Two light cone vectors parameterize uniquely a geodesics. You can compare this with the Minkowski expression, and you see in the Minkowski space-time, you parameterize geodesics using a point and a momentum vector. So actually, if you compute one particular point here, I took the point in a proper time equal to zero, you can eliminate one of those two light cone vectors and express the geodesics in terms of one point and one light cone vector. So light cone vectors play the role of direction of momenta. You can this is time-like geodesics. The geodesics is this curve here.
But what is the mass?
The mass, because as I told you, this is direction of momenta. I will come back to this point. So you can construct conserved quantities using those light-like vectors. This is the expression which is I don't have the time to explain all the details. This tensor is generalization to the Sitter geodesics of the conserved quantities analog
to energy momentum, and you can use those quantities to study classical scattering. I'm just flashing on this point. Don't ask questions. These quantities are conserved. So if you are considering a point like scattering, so two particles converging in a point and n particles outcoming, you can impose that the scattering happens at a single point and conservation of those quantities. And you see, for instance, you can completely solve. This example is two-dimensional. A particle of mass m1, which is addressed here, decays into two particles, apply the conservation rules, and you completely determine the outgoing direction of momenta. And you can see that this phenomenon can happen classically only if the mass of the entering particle is greater than the sum of the masses of the outgoing particles. And we will see that this phenomenon will not be true. This property will not hold in the quantum description of this phenomenon.
Conserved charges associated with the de Sitter isometries. Is that?
These are geodesics. Solution of the.
Well, I'm thinking of, say, the Noether charges associated with the. The Noether charges associated, or the usual
these are,
conserved
these are,
charges associated
yes, yes,
with
exactly.
the de Sitter isometries.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, what is the quantum? The quantum analog of a geodesic is, of course, momentum and I come back to your question, Emil. Momentum is used to parametrize plane waves in Minkowski space, and the same way you can construct plane waves in the de Sitter universe, which are, in a sense, covariant waves. By the following construction, take one point on the de Sitter universe, take one light-like direction, make the scalar product in the ambient space sense, and take a complex exponent here. So this is going to be a de Sitter plane wave, and the analogy is with the exponentials of the flat case, and you see, since this lambda here is going to play the role of the mass, the xi vectors is analog to the direction of the momentum. You have to take out the mass here. Why I say that these are plane waves? Because they are proper functions of the D'Alembert operator corresponding, this is a complex number, lambda. This is the eigenvalue, lambda times lambda plus d minus 1. This is the dimension of the space-time. So there is a natural involution, you can see, looking at this proper value, you can change lambda into bar lambda, which is minus lambda minus d minus 1, such that the sum of the two is minus d minus 1, and you get another solution corresponding to the same eigenvalue. So lambda minus lambda minus d minus 1. Plus one. So these are both scalar waves, which a complex square mass, which is lambda, lambda bar. Lambda bar, once again, is this particular involution. At the moment, these scalar waves are complex mass. So which are the waves for which the mass is real? You can distinguish three families of waves. In the first case, if you put this value for the lambda parameter, so with nu a real parameter, you get this wave, and check the conjugate wave. You see that the lambda bar now is the complex conjugate of lambda. So the conjugated waves in this case is precisely the complex conjugated wave. The conjugated wave in the sense of this conjugation is here for these values, the complex conjugate, and the mass is positive and greater than a critical value which is related to the dimension of the ambient space, of the de Sitter space-time. And of course, I didn't put here the radius, if you want the correct dimension, you have to put there the radius. So these are called principal waves, borrowing terminology from group theory. A second family, which is most important because these are the, in this family, there are the fields which are relevant for inflation, are the complementary, called complementary zeta waves because of the terminology of group theory. Now we have this lambda is a real parameter. So pay attention to the fact that these waves are now real. They do not oscillate. The conjugate wave is no more the complex conjugate. By the way, these waves are real. If the exponent now change this sign. The mass here goes from zero to the critical value, which is the same as before. So this part of the spectrum are the theory going from the massless to this value. And the waves here are different in the sense they do not oscillate. And there is also the possibility of considering these real waves beyond that limit. Now the square mass is real, but negative in this part of the spectrum. And one would like to think about the possibility of having tachyons in the de Sitter universe. If there exists a tachyon in the de Sitter universe, will be in this part of the spectrum. And as we will see, if I have the time to tell you, indeed there are tachyonic acceptable, completely acceptable, tachyonic quantum field theories corresponding to integer value of this parameter. And the true waves, indeed, we get a logarithmic correction. But of course, you didn't stop me, and I thank you for not doing this. But these waves are not well defined in the sense that there is a zero, a surface which is critical, where this value, the value of the phase, let's call it phase, is zero. I choose here this direction, psi here. This is the plane in which the wave changes sign. Here is positive, here is negative. So how do you define the complex exponent of a quantity which has not a fixed sign? Of course, you have to say something. For the moment, when you see this expression, you can think of some gluing of these two parts. Theta here is the step function. So you glue the wave where this argument is positive with a certain coefficient depending on lambda with another coefficient always depending on lambda where it is negative. What is the correct choice for this A and B? This is a matter for quantum field theory. So let me tell you a few words, even all of you are quantum field theorists, about what are the crucial properties of quantum field theory in general and in curved space-time in particular. What fixes the degrees of freedom of a quantum field is the commutator. And the fact is that the commutator is uniquely fixed by the equation of motion and the canonical initial condition if the space-time is global hyperbolic. There is no ambiguity in the commutator. But, so the commutator is, we are talking about linear fields, the commutator is an algebraic quantity, has nothing to do with the representation. But if you want to do quantum field theory, you have to represent your theory in a Hilbert space. So you have to realize your commutation relation as operator commutators in a Hilbert space. How could you do this? You know, everyone knows how one does canonical quantization, but let me pick what are the essential steps. You can do for linear fields, I can summarize the procedure by saying that I have to find a two-point function that solves a functional equation. So the two-point function which solves, let's say, the Klein-Gordon equation has to realize the commutation relation. So I take the two-point function at the pair of point, at the commuted pair of point, and this has to be the commutator. it has to be positive definite to have a physical interpretation. So you can reconstruct a Hilbert space once you have positive definiteness. And if you have a symmetry in your theory and the symmetry is unbroken, you ask for invariance, since we are talking of scalar fields. So how do I construct two-point functions? Think for a moment of what is the simplest way to construct two-point functions or green functions from mutators in flat space is to use the Fourier representation. What is the structure of the Fourier representation? You superpose plane waves at different points, and you integrate with respect to a measure which contains the mass of the theory. We can do the same here by using those plane waves. So what I do, I superpose a wave with the conjugate wave. You see here the conjugate exponent. And I integrate with respect to this momentum direction. Since the cone is invariant by dilation, the integration takes place on a surface which cuts all the general traces of the cone. Here I depicted the spherical section of the light cone. Of course, this definition seems to depend on the choice of lambda and on the choice of this surface. But you have for sure a solution of the Klein-Gordon equation with respect to both the variables x1 and x2, because the waves solve the equation. As I told you, lambda or minus lambda minus d plus 1 solve the same for the same as a solution for the same mass. Why I did superpose this way the waves? Because these plane waves are homogeneous function. So you see, if I dilate the light cone variable, just I pick just here this number, and if I do this superposition of a wave with the conjugate wave, this number here is just a to the power minus d minus 1. It's not going to depend on the mass. So if I superpose a wave with the conjugate wave. And this implies, because of theorem, the Stokes theorem indeed, that this construction is going to be independent on the choice of the surface on the light cone in which you are integrated. You can take any surface you want. The only condition is that it meets all the generatrices. And this gives for you the certitude that this expression is the Sitter invariant. Because you start proving rotation invariant, then you change to the hyperbolic section, you prove invariance with respect to another subgroup, and then you use the Iwasawa decomposition, and you are sure that this two-point function is invariant under the Sitter transformation. Now we come back to the point of choosing the coefficients. These waves have this coefficient, which are here, which I did not specify. So let me remind you, as Polyakov told us, there is no energy condition in the de Sitter universe, so we are here facing a problem, because standard quantum field theory in flat space-time is heavily constructed on the hypothesis of positivity of the energy momentum spectrum. So we cannot say a condition like this in the de Sitter universe. But I would like to remind you that there is a consequence of this condition of the energy momentum, positivity of the energy momentum spectrum, is that this condition tells you that the endpoint correlation functions are indeed very singular on the reals, but very regular if you move to the complex Minkowski space-time, and the endpoint correlation function on the real Minkowski space-time are boundary values of holomorphic function in domains which are very well studied of the complex Minkowski space-time. So positivity of the energy, analyticity in complex Minkowski space-time. Also, thermal spectrum, other properties of analyticity in complex space-time. So I cannot impose positivity of the spectrum, but I can look for correlation functions which are the right holomorphic properties. So you see here in an example the consequence of this positivity of the spectrum. So this is the on the reals, you see here real points. I can go to complex points. Here, the first point can be extended to the backward tube of the complex the sitter, of the complex Minkowski spacetime. You attach to every point a backward cone, and the imaginary part is inside that cone. And this is the second point is in the forward tube. You can do this extension because you have supposed positivity of the energy. So the measure contains this theta here. That's the positivity of the energy. So you have domains which are similar to this in the de Sitter universe. So you can study the geometry of the complex de Sitter manifold. Now I moved to the complex de Sitter manifold. So if the point has a real and an imaginary part, this is the equation of the complex de Sitter spacetime. So the real and imaginary part still satisfy the de Sitter equation, but they have to be orthogonal. Here I depicted the real and the imaginary part of one point in the complex de Sitter manifold, and this is a section of the future cone. And I have also a backward cone. So the fact is that you see, the imaginary part of a point in the future tube is pointing on this hyperboloid. So it's inside the asymptotic cone. This means that if I do the scalar product between this vector and the vector on the cone, it is positive, always positive. So there is no ambiguity in defining this wave all over the forward tube or all over the backward tube. And I can take boundary values from the tubes that choose for me one here and the phase here with a plus sign from the forward tube and a minus sign from the backward tube. So here is my solution for a two-point function. This is known as the Bunch-Davis or Euclidean or whatever you want. There are plenty of names for this two-point function, but I think this is the correct way of understanding it. It is a maximal analytic two-point function. By the way, to my knowledge, the first to have constructed this two-point function is Turing, Walter Turing. I come to this. So here is a Fourier representation, which is completely analogous to the flat space Fourier representation. And this is invariant. You see, here I have no need to specify coordinate system, and it is a plus, because if you do the study in coordinate system, you separate the variables, you cannot see the global holomorphic structure. So here is the Fourier representation of the Bunch-Davis, let's call it like this, vacuum, which is precisely analogous to this one. Excuse me? I'll come to that. By the way, here, this is for any mass. Lambda is a complex number. So there will be, of course, points in which this two-point function is infinite, because the constant will be diverging. This will include the massless case. So here is the real space-time representation of the Bunch-Davis vacuum. So you have one point here, a second point here, and the integration variable is somewhere on the light cone. So now I proved that it is invariant, so I can compute this two-point function by choosing. So it is a computation tool which is very practical, because I can put this point wherever I want to make this computation, and it comes out that indeed it is a precise type of hypergeometric function which can be identified to a Legendre function of the first kind, and then you can read the analyticity properties in this variable z, which is the scalar product of the two variables in the complex De Sitter space-time. So it is invariant on the complex De Sitter group. It is a holomorphic in a cat plane of this variable z, and the cat just reflects causality. You can get to the boundary, to the reals from above and from below, and so you can construct the two-point function and this permuted function, reconstruct the commutator, and all the Green's function. So what about positivity? Now we are back to the question. Here, you see, I produce a quantization which is for complex lambda. So the mass square is complex. Most of those theories are not unphysical because the positivity condition does not hold. Which are the theories for which the positivity condition, which is the condition that allows you to reconstruct a Hilbert space, what are the theories for which the positivity condition holds? They are the theories for which the square mass is positive, for instance. In particular, for the principal series, you see, the positivity is obvious. If you introduce this Fourier transform, the expectation value of this field phi of f is simply the square modulus of the Fourier transform integrated with respect to the measure on the cone. So it's precisely analogous of what happens in flat space. So here you read the positivity on the formula. If you want to prove that the complementary fields, which are once more relevant in inflationary context because they go down to the zero mass case, here the proof is a little bit more tricky. It relies on this. There is a possibility of writing the conjugate wave. You see here I have a plus. In term of waves, we have a minus here by superposing all momentum directions with this kernel. If you use this formula, you can prove that also these fields, precisely where the mass nu is less than d minus 1 over 2, so I'm using the blackboard in a sense, is positive. So I skip this, but there is the interpretation of this analyticity property is precisely in the sense of temperature. Of course, for me, there is a bit of confusion on this point in the literature. When you hear that the Sitter space has a temperature, the Sitter space has no temperature. What it has a temperature is a quantum field theory on the Sitter space. When you restrict it to this wedge, that's the only thing that has a temperature. This particular quantum field theory, if you choose another vacuum, there is no temperature. And even this vacuum has no temperature if you do not restrict here to the wedge. So I'm coming now to two topics. The question of what happens for the massless case or tachyons. So you see in the computation of the two-point function, I can put into evidence here this gamma, and you see that this gives rise to a divergence when lambda is integer or zero, because gamma functions have poles there. So you get that the two-point function corresponding to an integer parameter lambda n is infinite. And if you simply throw out this divergence, then what remains is a polynomial. This is a Gegenbauer polynomial here. And a polynomial is not good for quantum field theory because it's an holomorphic function. It has no cat, no commutator, no Green's function. On the other hand, if you take the limit of the commutator function, so consider the commutator and take the limit where lambda goes to n, this is perfectly well defined. It is non-trivial. So this points toward the fact that there exists a quantum field theory corresponding to lambda equal to n, but you cannot extract the two-point function by simply taking the limit lambda equal to n. This is precisely what happens also in the flat case for the massless two-dimensional scalar field. the commutator has a limit. When you put the mass equal to zero, the two-point function has no limit. But you can subtract this polynomial, so, and define here a new two-point function, w hat, when you have subtracted the polynomial, I take the limit. W hat exists, this limit exists, and what is more interesting is that it has the right commutator. If you compute the two-point function, the commutator with this hat wn, it is precisely the commutator you get as a limit of the of lambda going to n. So this renormalized two-point function has the right commutator. So it can be a representation for a massless field or tachyonic fields corresponding to integer negative mass. This, excuse me? No, I'm coming to this to a full discussion on this, so you will see immediately. But there is a point. You know that in flat space, taking this limit requires a renormalization, and the two-point function in the massless case is either local and covariant or positive. Cannot be both. Local and covariance, locality and covariance, and positivity are in conflict for the massless two-dimensional field. Here the situation is worse. If you consider the limit of the equation of motion, you get an anomaly. So these theories are no more satisfying the Klein-Gordon equation, but they satisfy rather the Klein-Gordon equation with the term here, Qn. So you get an anomaly by this renormalization. So first thing you can think, why not asking for the anomaly being zero on physical states, so you can study this condition. What is extremely interesting is that this condition, which selects for reestablishes somewhere the equation of motion, also gives to you a local and the Sitter invariant and positive quantization. So I have no time to discuss any detail, but the proof is based on the Fourier representation once more of the two-point function. You see the two-point function w hat is made of four terms. There is one term which is extremely important, which is this one, and there are other correction terms. You see, if you put here n equal to zero, you get the massless case. This is the Fourier representation for the massless the Sitter quantum field, and you can study the condition of being zero, the anomaly. This selects for you a certain space of test function, and you can prove on this space of test function, all these terms vanish. You are left only with this term, and you can prove that this term, which remains, is positive. So this gives for you a local covariant and positive quantization for these integer mass tachyons, including the zero mass scalar. In the excuse me?
What if we believe in field theory, start from a Lagrangian field theory and then go for it? What is the Lagrangian philosophy?
I don't really understand the question. I mean, this is field theory.
This is a set of ad hoc subtractions, right?
That gets as you do it for the massless field in two dimensions.
That gets a result which
this is there is a behind this there is a Beer's T transformation in this.
Oh well, then it's right, of course. Sorry.
this is what is the situation.
What is that last sentence? The positive physical space disappears in the flat limit.
This is because when you do the flat limit, you have to renormalize the mass as you do normally. You multiply n by the radius, so you move along this. this family of field theory, and in the end you get back to analytic continuation of two-point functions in terms of Hankel functions in for complex mass which are not positive. So you can look at the short distance behavior of these field theories. You see that they are locally Hadamard. And there are polynomials here. Of course, you can be the natural question, what is the relation of this kind of field? In the massless case, it's extremely simple. The quantization is that the physical space is the space of test functions which have zero mean. They are uncharged. If you restrict your test function space to this space, the theory is positive. And it comes as a limit of massive theories. It's a renormalization of, as you do in flat space. Excuse me, I will discuss with you as long as you want in the end of my talk. Otherwise, I cannot go up to the end. So now the second topic concerns the title of my talk about unstable particles. So here is the phenomenon I propose to study in the Sitter space, as is normally studied in flat quantum field theory. So here is completely known what you do, what you teach to your student to do. You use the Fermi-Gordan rule to extract something from a divergent quantity, and you get a lifetime which is proportional to something, and which has here a kinematical condition which forbid the decay of a massive particles into two particles which are whose the sum of the masses is bigger of the entering mass. And also, if you move to a moving coordinate system, you get like.
Is that the limit when k goes to zero? You go to
excuse me. This is flat phase. This is flat space. I'm just recalling what is the standard situation in flat space, as so you can.
So in flat space, the answer, the momentum of origin of particles.
No, this is in the rest frame.
Ah, okay.
And if you move, to, yes. So sorry, I will skip the details. How much time do you have?
Coming up on
5 minutes. I started. I start later, huh? What happens here? Everything is blocked. So let me go directly to the. So you can translate that formula into X space if you want to transportate this formula into the Sitter universe. So you see what is the situation here. This F is the wave packet you have prepared here, f of x, f of y. This is the these are the masses of the particles which are outgoing. This is the entering particle, and this is the infrared cutoff. The problem is in removing the infrared cutoff g, which are you have put in your. I didn't show you, but because I'm in a hurry. In the interaction Lagrangian, you put here a cutoff. And then you have to remove it at the end. So if you look at this formula, you can play with it a little bit. So here is the formula, and here is the result. The result is has several ingredients in it. Here is the so-called Chalem-Lehmann weight. When you expand this product here in terms of one field, you get this weight. The second ingredient is this constant. This constant tells you something about this integral, which reproduces the same two-point function. And the third ingredient is a solution of the Klein-Gordon equation of positive energy, let's say in Minkowski space or in the space with the right holomorphic properties, related to the wave packet you put in. So what are the difficulties in the Sitter computation? First thing is to establish this projector identity. You can do it for the principal series. You cannot do it for the complementary series. it is badly infrared diverging, but you can do it for the principal series only if you integrate over all the manifold. Otherwise, you don't get it. The second difficulty is computing this weight. This is a non-trivial problem in the Sitter space, while it is extremely simple in flat case. In flat case, it's an exercise in Fourier transform. In the Sitter space, you don't know how to do it, except you can express the result as a Mellerfock transform of a product of Legendre function. This integral of three Legendre function is not cannot be found anywhere in the books of integrals. So the first thing we tried to compute it was the case of equal masses. This was a little bit simpler. We could do it. One day, I believe that I solved this problem using this formula of Prodnikov. Maybe you know this book of Prodnikov and others in five volumes, which is better than Gradstein-Rydzyk. But this formula is unfortunately false. But what is even more strange, it provides the correct results, because it's just the imaginary part of this formula which is relevant. In the end, you can solve this problem by using Mellin transform techniques. I don't enter in any detail with this because I want to pass to the case when the masses are different. When the masses are different, Mellin transform techniques cannot be of help, and we have to devise a vectorial Fourier transform adapted to this geometry. Here comes a point where all the stuff I showed at the beginning, it comes into play for computations. So if you use the representation of the two-point function I still show you in Fourier space, you're sure that you find the study
better? Anything
on this? In the end, I don't have time, so that you can express this Legendre functions as an average on the sphere of the plane wave considered in the end of the holomorphy domain, where the manifold gets all the points imaginary, because there are two interesting Euclidean manifolds in the cubes, not only the sphere, but also the Lobachevsky space. If you do this, then you can rephrase. What happens here? Stuck.
Sorry.
We have a hockey stick.
So in the end, if you do this, I would like.
The black for
yeah. Right.
That is the advantage of using black.
So this complicated integral, it comes out to be now an integral of three waves like this. Did it show? No. And you have to integrate this over the Euclidean manifold. It's the Riemannian manifold, not the sphere, but the hyperboloid here, IH, and over three spheres here. Psi are on the spheres. And here you have exponents like this. So if you do this, the integral over Y, you can do the integral over y just by invariance. So this comes to be a star triangle relation. So you get something like three invariants like this. And now you have a triple integral on the sphere. You can also do this integral, and this comes out to be very interesting if you move to spherical geometry. It's going to be the momenta of a probability distribution. Then you can go right down to the end. I don't know why this is stuck. And you get a very nice formula, which is this. I write it. the integral of these three p functions is going to be the ratio of 8 gamma function of all the combination of these over 6 gamma function. But the point is that this combination, so this formula you don't find anywhere in literature, but the interesting point of this result is that this wave function never vanishes. Never vanishes. In flat space, you have these theta functions. Here, you have this thing. It's some sort of theta function.
So in particular, it has overlapped with it. You start with two principal representations. Does it have
It has an overlap. Yes. We go in the other way. If I have time, I'll talk about the complementary. But here we are in the principal series. And you see that you can have the decay of one particle into two particles of any mass. All in the principal series. When you move to the complementary series, since you have now an explicit formula, which I'm really, really upset with my computer, then.
Can you
If I reboot, it takes time.
Well,
I tried. Control alt delete. So when you go to the principal series, you get you can make the analytic continuation of this formula, and the analytic continuation of this formula gets now discrete contributions plus a continuum. This means that the decay in the complementary series case can happen only for discrete masses. So they seem to be super stable, those theories. Even if you put in an interaction at first order of perturbation theory, there is no decay. Unfortunately, this result is not complete in the sense it is zero from the point of view of the weight, but it's multiplied by infinite. What is this infinite? The infinite is the fact that, as I show you before, the projector identity do not work for the complementary series. So I have a zero times something which seems to be infinite. So what we can conclude. So maybe I show you just the formula. Yeah. And then I hand just to see it. It's not this. Sorry. Here we are.
So are you able to remove this infrared cutoff?
I mean, in the principal series, yes.
In the principal series, but
only there.
So this is not, the polytop is talking about maybe about a catastrophe, essentially.
I have not studied the vacuum decay. I'm studying one particle into two. He's studying some different quantity. Of course, phi 3, as we were told yesterday, is more singular than phi to the 4. So also this has to be taken into account. So let me just show you the final formula, just for curiosity. So here you have the star triangle relation, which hides an integrable model behind it, new integrable model. And then if you do the integration over the three sphere, you get this formula, this final formula. As I told you, you have the ratio of 8 gamma function over 6 gamma function. So it took us 3 years of work to get to this result. So it's a little bit too much, maybe. But what is strange? For me, it's strange the fact that if you go to the flat limit, this formula reproduces exactly the Minkowski result. Why I believe this is strange? Because it's not just asymptotics. I've integrated over the old Sitter manifold. And then take the flat limit. And this is the result is the integral of the flat manifold. The topology has changed in between. So there is no a priori reason. But it is true. And here you see the function depicted in the three-dimensional case. The inflationary case gets these poles. And in the end, if you study the infrared limit, you can do it. Now you need the coordinate system to do. What is maybe strange, and that if you really go to the infinite limit for this G, on the infrared cutoff, you lose dependence on the initial wave packet. Maybe it's strange, maybe it's not so strange, because the Sitter geometry is there to erase the tails. So that's all. Thank you.
Just have one or two questions and take the
discussion offline later on. So anybody got a quick question?
I was wondering, those harmonics which you have been constructing, can you understand, for example, in terms of whether they are, there is no energy conservation in the series space, but at least you can construct harmonics which are positive energy in some regions of this.
Yes, but if you do the Fourier transform, for instance, to make a point, if you do the Fourier transform with respect to flat coordinate system, you get the anti-function. H2, H1. So it's an invariant superposition of those anchor functions. So it's really the bunch that is the question.
If I understood correctly the way that you got rid of the infrared cutoffs, you got rid one of them first and then to apply this composition law.
Yes.
Is there any possibility that the results may depend on,
yes.
I mean, if you treat them on equal ground, do you expect to get the
same?
It's
much more difficult. I could not do it. Mm. I did what I could. But of course, I am not sure. Yes.
So, if I understood correctly, so the case of zero mass, you added a term which you can view also in the Lagrangian sense as a linear coupling of field to some source. Q, right?
This Q, I do some very, very elementary thing. I get just a limit. Then I can ask myself, what is this Q? There is a paper by Folacci in 1991, 1992, 1993, just after this IDBI study with Allen of the master phase, in which he considers on the sphere, and he constructs the case m equal to 0 and m equal to minus 1, some particular BRST type transformation, which seems to be related to this. But of course, going from the sphere to the real is not so easy. Then I discussed it with Polacci. Could we do this BRST transformation in general? He told me, yes, we'll do it in half of an hour. And then at the end of the week, we didn't know. But for instance, in the m equals 0 and the m equals 1, minus 1 case, there is a BRST transformation. It is not me, my result. It's a result by Polacci.
All right, let's call it here, and thank you, Igor, again.
Our next speaker is...